What a win for the Waratahs on the weekend, taking down the Crusaders for the second time in 3 years. An excellent game from the Waratahs all across the park. Just everything a Waratahs fan could ask for. Welcome to the show. I'm here with Luke as always, and super round for Super Rugby. First of all, what a round. An average of what? 60. I think I saw it was an average of 69 points scored per game, which is, you know, nice. but some really entertaining and close games as well. You know, I think other than the Chiefs and the Brumbies, everything was within 10 points. I'm just looking across the board. Yeah, every other game, well, except for the Crusaders and Waratahs. So Rebels and Force were 14 points. I can say everything was within 15 points. There you go. Or within 14 points. So less than two converted tries in just about every game except for the Chiefs and the Brumbies. So that is a really great result for Super Rugby because it shows the competitiveness of the teams this year. Now, who would have ever thought the Crusaders would be 0-2 and below Moana Pacifica and the Melbourne Rebels on the table? Who would have ever picked that? Not me. Not most people. Most people wouldn't have picked the Waratahs to win, coming in as $8 odds to beat the Crusaders. And let's talk about that game a bit more. We'll talk about the other games that happened in Super Round, but let's focus in a bit on the Crusaders and the Waratahs. Luke, I want to know, as a Kiwi looking at that Waratahs team, what did you see that you thought enabled them to beat the Crusaders?
Yeah, look, I watched their game last week, and I've kind of mentioned this. They, against the Reds, they never looked like threatening a win. They didn't look bad, but I just said, is this going to be the Tars for the season? They look all right, but don't deliver on anything. And then I think Morgan Turinui summed it up well, and there was just desperation. Again, the Crusaders are normally crisp. They're normally so crisp. They don't drop balls. They don't get charged down. But every single opportunity that the Waratahs got, they scored. And to be fair, the Crusaders gave them a few. But players like Jake Gordon, Tane Edmund, they stepped up and they took those opportunities when they had them. And against a good side like the Crusaders, if they give you opportunities, you have to take them, and that's what I think that's what the Tars did this week compared to last. They had opportunities against the Reds, but didn't take all of them, and I just think this was a big changing point for them this week. Anytime a ball hit the ground, someone was on it from the Tars, and chances are it was going 60 metres the other way. So that was the big thing for me.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of point of contact win, and the confidence in that gave the Waratahs. The other thing to point out, and the man that's been rightly praised in the media has been Tane Edmund. And he is self pointing out the difference in his game last week to this week. Last week he ran it, I think he said one time. Like he was mostly there facilitating with passing. This week he had double digit carries, really threatening, set up a few tries, saving a try where Severis did that little kick through towards the end of the game, saved a try that could have made the margin even now and potentially given the Crusaders momentum for victory. So I think Tane Edmund deserves a lot of credit for that, and he's definitely now put himself in line for that potential Wallabies 10 jersey, which we had a discussion on in the previous podcast, especially with his opposite numbers or his rivals for that position not necessarily having their best games. But I think overall the Australian 10s had a decent outing in Super Week. I think Tane Edmund put his hand up the most, though. His stock rose the most out of that. Ned Hattigan had one of his best games I've ever seen in a Waratahs jersey. The fact that we played without both starting centers and still got a win is pretty incredible as well. Tristan Riley, someone I was speaking to on the weekend at Touch Footy said Tristan Riley was a pleasant surprise. I said, yeah, you'd play hard too if your other option was to go back to the West Tigers, you know? So there's a lot on the line for him in that game.
I also think, just mentioning on your comment, a player who deserves a lot of praise is Joey Walton, as you mentioned. Both your starting centres out, but Joey Walton held David Harvili to like 2 metres. That's an All Black centre. Like, let's not hide away from the fact yes, I expect a lot more from David Harvili against a player like Joey Walton, who, you know, played a few games last year, but this is his first kind of, now he started the both two games in inside centre. I go, man, what he did to stop David Harvili, and even some of the crisp touches he had, was like, that was, what I saw was similar, like a All Blacks performance versus an Australian performance, the opposite way with what the Waratahs did. But yeah, I think for the Crusaders, 0-2, there's a lot of Crusaders fans moaning out there, and rightfully so, because they're so used to winning that they're confused what's happened. Look, in my belief, it's not doom and gloom yet for Crusaders fans. Like, what they did in the second half against the Chiefs showed that they've got the pieces. They haven't put it together yet, and it's tough, because you've got to think, not only did they lose Scott Robinson, who arguably the greatest Super Rugby coach of all time, but they lost up there one of the greatest Super Rugby players of all time, and in the most important position on the rugby field at fly half, Richie Mwama, and now they've got two young guys trying to fill in, and it just hasn't clicked yet.
But Sam Whitelock missing as well, you know, experience, one of the great second rowers. Lineouts were a struggle for him. Yeah, agreed. Look, it's just the Crusaders are going through their transition period. They're reloading. They're figuring out what their strengths are, where how they can be successful with the talent they've got on the field. And yeah, as you said, look, both of these games, the Waratahs and the Chiefs, they had incredible comebacks to be within striking distance of those games. You know, with the Chiefs, they fell just short, and with the Waratahs, they fell short as well. You know, it's their getting behind early. You know, they scored first in this game, but they gave the Waratahs too many opportunities. I did like how it points the Waratahs, you know, went to score the try, but then the next time they're given a penalty, they're like, no, cut our losses, take the points. You know, you've got to play smart. I thought that those decisions were the right decisions to make, and you know that they got the win. That's what matters at the end of the day. You know, and it was, as I think, yeah, definitely highlighting the effort. There are a lot of pieces that may not necessarily be superstars, but put in a lot of effort. You know, Charlie Gamble had a great game. Vailanu, Hugh Sinclair, the forwards overall had a really good game. Walton and the backs, you know, it was overall effort. Jake Gordon, what a rugby, he's just a rugby player, you know, intercept, setting up the fend off as well, was just, you know, beautiful to see. So I think overall, yeah, it is effort by the Waratahs. The question is that going to be enough for the other Kiwi teams? And, you know, they face the Highlanders at home this week. Now I'm actually going to go to that game because it fits well in my schedule. I'm expecting that actually quite a few people will be motivated now to go after a win against the Crusaders. I really hope they do. And I'm putting the call out there that if you're a Super Rugby fan living in Sydney, make your way down to the game. Tickets are cheap as, you know, we went last year to a Waratahs game. General admission tickets are $25 a person. That's cheap. I'm expecting some numbers there. I'm hoping for at least because
as well. Yeah.
Sorry?
First home game of the season as well.
Exactly. First home game of the season against a team that they've beaten before in the Highlanders. Should be an entertaining game still. And they're coming off a big win against the Crusaders.
Just mentioning on that. This win, I think, was so big for the Waratahs, Darren Coleman, everything. Purely because, say they lose this game, which they were expected to do, and the way they turn this around and win, as you said, it's given them confidence. And they can go on with that confidence that they can beat any team in the comp just about now. Like the Crusaders, when you beat the Crusaders, you start thinking you can win a championship. So, like, that to me, I go, if they didn't win this game, they would be hosting the Highlanders at home, 0-2, would have been heads down, struggle.
Yeah.
You know, Coleman might be out the door. What's happening here? Now they go into this with a renewed set of energy. They then have to travel to Fiji and Dura, who we all know is a tough place to go.
They're home against Blues first, then travel to Fiji.
So home against the Blues, which is, again, no easy task.
Exactly.
And then to the Dura. So I go, if they hadn't won that game, we could be looking at an 0-5 start and disaster. Now I go, like, if they hadn't won that game, I would have put them as not favourites against the Highlanders. Now I go, well, if they can do what they did last week against the Highlanders, they'll win that game. The Highlanders are just coming off a game against the Blues where they made 237 tackles. So they're not going to be fresh bodies for it, having to play away again, first home game of the season for the Tars. Then you've got the Blues, which, again, if they win that game, then they're right on track for being able to push the finals all of a sudden. And to go over to Jura, it was never going to be an easy start. So that was such an important one to go, we can do this.
Yep, exactly. And then after the Dura, they have the Rebels who have shown some fight, and that's in Melbourne as well. So not necessarily an easy game.
Oh yeah, then all the Brumbies fans will turn up for that one. Yeah, that's exciting.
Well, it's after this win against the Force, comprehensive win.
No, it wasn't comprehensive. They were terrible again in the first half. I honestly want to write them both of those teams.
14 point win. But the thing is, right? I think for the Melbourne Rebels, any win this year is huge for them. With the amount of off-the-field issues they have going on, where these players don't know their future beyond next year, right, to still show up to your team in those colours, not with no contract secured for next year, with your team dissolving, like how many players experience that situation? You know, that's
I would very argue rare the territory. Opposite, though, that they're playing for their futures because – If they don't perform,
that's what I'm saying. The win is important to ignite that. I think what we saw in week one against the Brumbies was the shock of essentially being in administration. I think this week has given them some confidence to say, okay, well, we need to play for our futures now, and we can do it. We can get a win, right? So I think that they're gonna. And as well, remember, it's a very different team from last year. A lot of change pieces. Week one is always going to be difficult for them to put it together. Week two, by no means am I saying the Force is a good team and that the Rebels are going to be a competitive, finals team this year. I'm just saying it's important for the Rebels. I'm just saying the Rebels aren't going to be an easy mark for any team, for the Waratahs. I mean, for some of the high-end New Zealand teams, sure, they'll be an easy mark for the Reds and Brumbies as well, probably. But for your middle of the table, so your number five team downwards, they're not going to be an easy victory, a pushover. They weren't last year. Remember, they split with the Waratahs last year.
I'm going to wait and see on that because I honestly don't believe it. Like the only reason I say that as well, the Force in two games now have averaged giving up 46 points. So they gave up 44 against the Canes, now 48 here. The Rebels in both games have given up over 30 points against teams who, as we look at the Brumbies, got well beaten by the Chiefs, maybe not be as good as we thought they were. When I look at the Force, they can attack but can't defend. So I just go, to me, until they fix their problems, which I think this is a game that's going to hide their problems, like people like you are going to go, oh, this was a good win, they can do it. I don't think, until they can prove me wrong, I haven't seen enough from the Rebels to say that they can beat anyone.
For me, it's psychological more than it is game, if that makes sense. It's their own self-belief. I think that they are going to fight harder now because they have won a game, if that makes sense. They've won a game, so they have the confidence that we can win a game. So they're going to fight. They're not going to collapse and give up. Right, which you could forgive them for doing in this year. You know, you could understand if that's what happened, but it does. But that's not what they're going to do. That's what I think anyway. That they're not going to just let teams win. So that's the point I'm trying to say. Is I'm saying they're not going to roll over. They're not going to roll over and just give up. And remember last year the Waratahs played in Melbourne and lost in Melbourne. So it's not a given win for them. So that's the point I'm trying to get across is that that wouldn't have been an easy win. That won't be an easy game for them. Then after that, they have the Brumbies. So you could have been looking at a 1-6 Waratahs team by week seven if they hadn't won this game against the Crusaders. And then they play the Crusaders again in Christchurch, 1-7. Then they have a bye week. Then they play the Chiefs. Could be 1-8, 1-9. You know, so this game now sort of flips the script on a few of these games where you're like, okay, you know, now they play the Highlanders. They're probably favorites in that one. They could win. They host the Blues at home. Maybe that'll even up the odds a bit more. You could see it happening. It's definitely changed my perspective on this Waratah season. I was a bit wary. I think I probably bought a bit too much into preseason and the negativity around the sort of lack of performance. There wasn't anything really inspired in there. I saw a lot more of that this week. They need to continue it moving forward. Look at other games. Well, we already really talked about the Rebels and Force game. There's not I guess, that much to talk about there. I mean, there were some good individual performances in the Rebels side. You know, Carter Gordon sort of maybe regained a bit of his mojo, is what I'd say. Again, more of a confidence psychological thing than a necessarily game or skill thing. And I think, because I think that is an issue for him because of that whole World Cup experience.
But he's still showing to me flashes of World Cup Carter Gordon. I mean, he missed a kick from 2 meters to the left of the post, and then he went and scored an intercept try. Like, that is Carter Gordon, if you could sum it up in a sentence.
It's just not inconsistency. I saw even on, I think, Rugby Pass or Rugby Bloke, one of the two, something with rugby in the name. Shout out to whoever it was. Suggested that potentially Carter Gordon could play 12 and someone else would pay 10 because he's a strong carry the ball and he's got the talent there. I think we've got enough talented inside centers, but it is an option for him. But just to take away the kicking duties from him so he doesn't get into his own head about that. I mean, look, I think Joe Schmidt's exploring all options. He's already said he's favoring domestic talent, so I think he's likely to see an inside center, 10, all of that from, you know, with a preference of the local competition. You know, I think maybe the only player from outside of Australia that is going to get much of a big look in would be probably Will Skelton, because I think Marika Corabetti, he said he's done playing for the Wallabies, although I haven't heard much again on that front since then. But it's with just this last 2 weeks, we've seen a lot of flair from a lot of the Australian players. So, you know, I think there's a solid team to be built out of that. Looking at the other results, Highlanders and Blues, high scoring game, but the Blues ended up getting the win there. I think the Highlanders were leading at one point in that game, just before the half, I think. Yeah, so probably a bit disappointing for them to not get the victory. The Battle of the Pacific, Moana Pacifica, Fiji Endura delivered as promised. High scoring game, 3 points in it, and Moana Pacifica getting the win. Again, big for them to get a win. Maybe there's a little bit more hope for Moana Pacifica this year than we previously thought. They lost by 14 to the Highlanders. So, you know, against some of these Australian clubs, they're definitely a threat to take a win.
Yeah, and in Dunedin, so they were up at halftime. So there's a lot of that of good to be seeing from Moana Pacifica. My question I pose is, can they make finals? Now, let's run through it. Like, they obviously have a slightly harder draw because they have to play all the New Zealand teams twice, I believe.
Mm.
But they now, if they, let's say the Rebels and the Force don't turn this around and they're both dog shit.
Yeah.
Let's say the Druida can't sort out their away winning performances. So then we go, there's 1, 2, 3 teams. The Waratahs, as we've mentioned, if they didn't win this game, we would have put them down as a fourth team. All of a sudden, you're going, Moana Pacifica in the finals. Now, obviously, the Waratahs have maybe changed their fate, which is fantastic for you. But I also go, there's, you know, the Highlanders have to play everyone twice. Like, if the Moana Pacifica steal a game at home against them, I just sit there and I go, there are so many pieces that if they keep playing at this level and they keep knocking over, like, they were up against the Druida by more points and it took a Fijian comeback-esque plays to make the comeback. So I don't rule them out of a finals contention if they keep playing the way they do with the players they're playing with.
Their halfback, Inari, is still one of my favourite players. I think he's severely underrated and unrecognised in his efforts. But that'd be fantastic. Like, I think if Super Rugby's praying for two things this year, it'd be for the Rebels and Moana Pacifica to make finals, because then you can sort of justify putting money into those two and keeping them around. Or you merge them and then you think, if these teams just both barely miss out in finals, you merge those teams, you potentially got another finals team on your hand with the Jaguares coming in. That seems more than likely to happen next year. I think that's going to be big for the competition. Then, but there's no set deal beyond 2025. The contract is, there's a principal agreement that's extended beyond that. But 2025 is the last year of, I believe, signed terms. So after 2025, all options are sort of on the table, you know, including splitting into conferences, things like that. So next year there is going to be a competition in the same format as we've got this year, maybe with the Rebels gone and the Haguaris in, but beyond that, we could be seeing something different. Then we had the Chiefs versus the Brumbies. I think the Chiefs are just
that good.
they're just that good. I think last year they were very, very good as well. Just couldn't beat the Crusaders in the final. You know, we've all been there. Well, I guess we haven't. I think the Brumbies just copped it. You know, it's just Chiefs are that good. They were the regular season bullies last year. Started out last year similar to this year. And they're going to be the team to beat. Damian McKenzie looked excellent. And again, threat running the ball as well as playmaking. That's what I saw from Tane Edmund as well. And I think that's where, you know, those guys really are looking to make their way into their National 10 jerseys. Okay. Then we had a thrilling game, which I'm sure you would have loved. The Hurricanes versus the Reds, 38-33. The Hurricanes getting it in Golden Point while a man down. Jordy Barrett off with a red card in his 100th game.
Yeah, I had some thoughts on this, and I'll be interesting to hear your opinion. No, it was definitely a red card. Don't get me wrong about that. I'm not going to argue that point. I'm going to argue...
I think Jordy recognised it at the time as well. You can see when he's going off the field, he wasn't like...
I'm coming back.
Arguing or looking, or looking like pissed at the referee. He was looking annoyed at himself. Like, we've all had that look where he's like...
Damn.
Fuck. Yeah.
But what I'm going to argue, and we discussed this last year, the 20-minute red card, I think, can go now. I don't think we need the 20-minute red card. And the reason I say that is because we've got this review system. So my previous thought with the red card was because the referee's got to make a split-second decision between a yellow and a red, they may get it wrong, and it may be one of those ones where it's, oh, it's just there, it's just here. Now it's at a point where it gets reviewed. So as much as I don't think we won't see many wrong decisions, and I don't think going forward that you now need that 20-minute, like, we should just be good enough to not get red carded. Like, the Jordy Barrett will look back and go, I shouldn't have been red carded. Like, that was a poor tackle. So to me, it goes, what the 20-minute red card was doing was stopping any mistakes that were making by the ref that kind of, we go, oh, it wasn't really that bad. But now I go, it's not enough. Like, for that tackle, the Hurricane should have been a down man for the whole game from the point that he got red carded. I can't remember what time it was, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. For me, I'm always just wary of red cards and taking a player off the field for forcing a team to play without a player for the entire game. Because with a red card as well, then you also miss weeks after that. You also can get, that can be heightened or lowered. So for me, it's not as if the red card isn't punishing the individual enough. I'm always wary of group discipline where an individual's actions force a group to be punished. I'm not necessarily a fan of that principle. But I get the idea of it, because you then want to be more careful because you don't want to let your teammates down. So I understand that. I think for the whole game, for me, it can be because that's such a variable. Because if that happens in the first 5 minutes of the game, that's 75 minutes of playing a man down.
But that's
right?
To me, that's part of the strategy that needs to go into it. Like, if you make that mistake in the first 5 minutes, you've cost it. Like, and with the group argument, I would say if you punch someone on the field, you deserve to be off for the whole game, and your team deserves to be without you. Like, you shouldn't be replaced if you punch someone, in my argument. Like, that's the dumbest move you can make. Like, even if Jordy Barrett's one, you can sit there and make the argument, look, he clearly didn't mean to do it, but he got his tackle technique wrong. And the strategy, you have to be in those first 10 minutes. Like, we saw it in the Rugby World Cup final. Like, it can cost your team a game. Like, but you can still get a quality game out of it.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. I'm just saying that myself, I I'm not a huge fan of that. I would prefer to see the red card and your team play. I like the 20-minute one because you're still your team's still playing 20 minutes without you, and that is still a big period of time to be without a player on the field.
I don't think it's enough of a punishment, is what I think. That's my only thing. That's where I would argue. Even if you were to say 40 minutes, sweet, that's a half of rugby with 14. I just don't think, at the moment, I don't think the punishment fits the crime. Like, we're sitting there, yellow cards deserve 10 minutes in the bin. I get that. That makes a lot of sense. A red card, I just don't know where you draw the line in that punishment.
Yeah, as well, the fact that some things can be called like a red card that I don't think are on the level of punching someone in the face. Like, for example, where you've been given a yellow earlier in the game and then later in the game, your team's defending their goal line. The referee's awarded a penalty and he picks you for the yellow. So then you've got two yellows and now you're red carded, you know, which I believe happened to someone last year in Super Rugby. I can't remember who. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So that for me, that doesn't deserve for you to be off for the entire game. So I think if we talked about something like having the orange card or whatever, where you had that, where you could then separate the higher level offenses from those mid level, what would be then classified as mid level ones, then I'd be more comfortable with having a card where the player's off for the entire game and the team is down a player for the entire game. Because I think there is a great distinction between intent compared to huge recklessness compared to just making a small mistake in the middle of the moment. Like, if someone's going in with a huge swinging arm, that's just completely reckless. There's nothing there. Whereas with Barrett, it was stupid, but I don't think it was enormously reckless. Like, I don't think it was egregiously reckless. Someone like Lockie Swinton has gone into tackles egregiously recklessly with absolutely zero intent to wrap an arm or to even lower or anything like that. I think you could see with Barrett, he was at least sort of semi-crouching down. He just got it wrong.
Got it wrong.
So yeah. I think I think there's a distinction to be made there, and that's why I'm hesitant to inflict that punishment on the rest of the team for not even necessarily stupidity, because I wouldn't even call that stupidity from Barrett. I would just say it was just an error, a mental mistake, and we all make mistakes because no one's perfect. So that for me is why I have such an issue with it.
Sure, no, fair enough, and I get it. I sat there and I was like, interesting now that, you know, we had the World Cup and everything, now that it doesn't seem, with the TMO review, it doesn't seem to affect me as much anymore. Like, if it's a red card, we're going to find out if it's a red card. But Pacific Nations Cup is getting a new look, and boy, I couldn't be more excited for it. I think it's a fantastic idea. Look, we talked, you know, about the potential of having a Six Nations Southern Hemisphere, but I actually think that this could be more beneficial to these Six Nations than two of the nations coming up and de-strengthening that this tournament. So what we have now is, at the moment, or this new look, is going to be two groups of three pools, Samoa, Tonga and Fiji in one pool, Japan, Canada and USA in the other pool. You're going to get a minimum matches of three team, minimum games of three for all teams, but they play round robin. So, you know, Samoa will play Tonga and Samoa will play Fiji. They will then go into a semi-finals and final setup with fifth and sixth also playing a playoff. So an example of how this tournament could look. Fiji beats Samoa, Fiji beats Tonga, Samoa beats Tonga. So Fiji goes top of pool A, Samoa 2, Tonga 3. Japan beat Canada, Japan beat America, so they're top of pool A. America beat Canada, so they're second. So then America will play Fiji, and then Samoa will play Japan, and then Tonga and Canada will play off on the fin six. Bam, 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 we have a final. Fiji wins the final and show that they're the greatest team ever, only because I'm wearing a Fiji top right now. But yeah, so that I'm really excited for this. I think this is fantastic because I think the more games we can get in the Pacific teams is great. And this, I think, strengthens Japan as well with a relationship with the US and Canada in rugby. Like, again, USA and Canada are not at the points with rugby where they should be. They should be, like, they neither of them made the last Rugby World Cup, which is a travesty for rugby. And so I think this strengthens them as well, and it does a really good job with that. And I think it's really interests me because I think this could even expand even more. And I think there's a lot of potential to expand this into South America and to everything like this. So, Husey, what are your first thoughts on this new look Pacific Nations Cup?
It's a really good time to be announcing it as well in the aftermath of the NRL's venture into Las Vegas and in America, because a lot of Americans won't care about the differences between union and league. They'll see a rugby on the screen and they'll just watch it, which personally I think that's what everyone's attitude should be, because that's my attitude. I see rugby on the screen, whether it's league or union, and I watch it. So I think it's great. It's a great move. Getting America and Canada involved as much as we can is a huge move for world rugby, particularly with an upcoming World Cup there as well, and just the huge sports market that exists in America. I really like it. I agree with you completely. The more games we can get in these Pacific nations, the better, the stronger that they'll become. One comment I'm seeing right now, and I am going to credit this one. So this is on Rugby Bloke's post about the Pacific Nations Cup, and a man named Ben Hocken says, any way you could structure it so the winner of this gets a spot in the rugby championship the following year? I'm sure there'd be a million reasons why it wouldn't work, but it could be fun and gives these nations a chance for more competition against the top tier teams that they are wanting. Now, I know you spoke before about not necessarily wanting to dilute the rugby championship. I don't think it's a terrible idea. I think it is something worth exploring, because as I said in our previous discussion about that, we can't go back to tri-nations, so we've got to look to the future and look what could be developed.
Yeah, no, I love that comment, actually, and I think you could do it really well, because I think what I actually envision if that happened, so you'd have a team would go up and compete the next year, and then you'd have a different team every year competing in it. Ideally, that team would either come last, or even if they didn't climb last, let's say we say the four big teams stay in it and this team goes up. So say Fiji wins it, they go up. A team would replace them in the Pacific Nations Cup for that year, and then you just have a swap for whoever. Say Japan win it the next year, Fiji go back down, Japan stay up. Now, what I like about that is I think everyone would then play each other once and you'd have a bye, so you'd have four games. And it opens up the idea that if we're only doing this over, you know, 5 weeks, where you're playing four games, 5 weeks because of a bye, then we can have a potential tour, like I know the All Blacks lining up with South Africa to go and do a tour. Like, I would love the idea of the All Blacks touring Australia and getting to play. Imagine the All Blacks playing the Waratahs at Allianz Stadium, like stuff like that, and vice versa. So it could open up for like a mini tour as well after, because we're not playing everyone twice. So that's, you know, six games. We could shorten this a bit. I can definitely see a really good idea there. But yeah, that's an interesting concept. I just think, and I think, like you said as well, it will strengthen, like, Fiji getting to play four games against those quality opponents would be great. Four games against Japan. And the fact with this one as well, that the final series are taking place in Japan and then the US in alternate years. Japan's such a moneymaker for rugby. The fact that what I actually think could be really good here is those Pacific nations, some of those players getting to play in Japan, getting recognised by Japanese scouts, talent going to Japan. It's not so far for them to travel to get a Fijian squad together. Currently, the only way is to go over to France. You see so many Fijians over in France rugby. So, again, another venture into Japan. We always like that. I think, as you said, Rugby World Cup coming up in America, we need to grow the game there. How that can be done, I think this is a fantastic first step.
Absolutely.
But let us know in the comments who you think would win a Pacific Nations Cup or will win this Pacific Nations Cup next year. Our Fiji favourites obviously went, I believe, the furthest, yes, out of all these teams in the last Rugby World Cup.
Japan could be a threat.
Exactly.
Japan. Especially if they're going to be hosting the final.
Especially with the pool that they've currently got set up, which is USA and Canada. You'd think they'd breeze past those two teams pretty easily, whereas Fiji playing some pretty physical battles against their Pacific Island brothers. So it could be a really interesting final series. I'm so excited for when this kicks off. I think this will do really well. It's taking place in August and September, so stay tuned for those games. I still think a big thing for World Rugby is a globalised calendar. They need to sort out, like, when are we playing internationals, when are club rugbys, things like that. work all that out. It's, I know it's not easy, but I think that's going to be a major first step.
Get the South African teams back at Super Rugby. Yeah, all those kinds of stuff to be worked out.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you for joining us on That Rugby Podcast. I've been Luke. That has been Husey. We are the Sports Booth. We will talk to you later. Goodbye.
Peace.